Welcome to The Word on the Hills, with me, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, and my co-host, Wynne Sheltmer. Each week, we visit with a local author, get an introduction to their work, and take a glimpse into their lives. We try and find out what prompts them to write, and give them an opportunity to hear them read from their work. Today, we are very pleased to welcome Diane Taylor. Welcome, Diane. You've done so many interesting things in your life, it's difficult to know where to start. However, I know you've travelled a great deal, taking your skills as a teacher of French and ESL to Miami, where you taught Haitian immigrants, and that you built a 46-foot sailboat with a partner and spent a number of years chartering it in the Caribbean. I believe that time was the source of your early memoir about a life at sea. And now your volunteer work for hospice in Port Hope has been the inspiration for at least one article. How did you get interested in memoir writing?
Way back, I picked up a book, this would be in the 60s, called the Foxfire Books, and these were oral accounts that high school students had done in Georgia, in the United States, of elders who lived up in the hills, and they talked about their lives, which were basically self-sufficiency lives, and the stories were told in their own words and with all the grammar mistakes, and I was really impressed with the authenticity of these stories, and I thought at the time, if my life ever slowed down, I would do something like that. And eventually, my father and I were in the same city, Miami, as it happened, and I decided to do his story. And so I interviewed him and put his story together, and he was so pleased with it, and it was such fun that a few years later, I started giving courses in how to do that.
But you have also written lots of memoirs for people, haven't you? Your father was not the only person you interviewed.
That's true. One of the first courses that I gave, a woman whose name was Helen, sat throughout the course without taking notes, and about a year later we ran into each other by chance, and she asked me if I would help her, and that was the first one for other people that I did. And she's now 90. Mm-hmm. I was just talking to her this morning, as a matter of fact, and we had a good time talking about that time of writing her story.
I know what you mean about how vivid these spoken things are. Was the hook in those books by Barry Broadfoot when he collected all those stories about the prairies from people. Do you remember those? You know, I know that you've helped many people write their memoirs, but I understand you have a memoir of your own published. Can you tell us about that?
Well, that was from my years on a small boat at sea, cooking on a two-burner kerosene stove, and I put it together because I had adapted many recipes from a kitchen with oven to just the two-burner kerosene stove, and I wanted to pass those on, and had many sea stories to tell, too, and so I combined the stories with recipes.
Well, would you like to read to us from your newest project now?
I'd be happy to.
Tell us what the book is called.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a book on how to write memoir. I'm calling it The Gift of Memoir because I believe it is a gift when people leave a written legacy of their lives behind for either family or for a wider audience. To read somebody's memoir is to walk a mile in their shoes, and you learn a lot about life by understanding somebody else. So this is a chapter on including the body as part of what you're seeing when you go into the past. I've called it Avoid Disembodied Characters. The secret to the good memoir is the good anecdote, and the secret to a good anecdote is specific detail, and specific mention of the body's landscape is a crucial part of that detail. It creates a connection between characters and events. It inspires the writer to connect with his own characters and the reader to make that same connection. We are body, mind, and spirit. The body can lead the way to that union. We forget that we have bodies. Our hands do our bidding, but how conscious are we of our many fingers, the cuticles we push back every week, the small cuts on the knuckles from working in the garden yesterday, the veins on the back that carry blood cells out to the tips of the fingers and back again? "The Body Has Its Reasons" is the title of a book I once read. Yes, the body has aisles and accidents and meeting places and ages and a tongue that savors soft raspberries picked straight from the bush. That's why we go back every July in the hot sun to go picking again. My fingers connect me to my ear when I play the piano. The tooth yanked out, then gone, leaving a big, bloody, gaping crater, is so like the big, bloody hole in my life when Ashy died. The last bone in my spine, the coccyx, cracked when my friend's young dog rammed his friendly, truck-sized body into my legs, and I went down hard on that bone. Lovely to see my friend, but some ambivalence there. Why did she have to bring that bungling Great Dane that weighed more than she did? Then he charged into the kitchen. When I hobbled after him, I saw that all the icing on one half of the carrot cake had been cleanly licked off. "That's your half," I said to Linda. She laughed. We both laughed, could hardly stop. Still, it was 3 months before I walked without limping. Then there are a few places in the survival of the species area that can loom large. Someone I know had a hysterectomy. Someone else remarked that it was routine surgery. Is there any such thing as routine removal of a womb? Of course, the important thing is what we do with what we have left, but I would want to acknowledge the loss, the dismemberment in some way. A womb can bloom like a full moon. Joy Kagawa in Obasan exquisitely describes the close relationship she had as a girl with her grandmother, her Obasan, through the baths they had together, through mention of at least 20 body parts. A very touching scene emerges that transports the reader to the tub of hot water and the warm family connection between Grandma Kato and her granddaughter. We see and feel the washcloth as it travels over thumbs, arms, chest, belly, soles of the feet, between the toes. Some of my students in one class felt this amount of detail was invasive. I'd use another word, sacred. Write with awareness of the whole body. Here's a tough assignment. Go for a massage. As you become aware of every part of your body that is being touched, realize that you can bring this same awareness to giving bodies to the people in your stories. Or try this short exercise. Clasp your hands. Which thumb is on top? Clasp your hands again with the other thumb on top. How does this feel? The first time I did this, I was astonished. I was suddenly aware of my fingers, their length, their bones, their placement, their power. Mentally scan the entire body of the person you are writing about, inside and out, for this kind of awareness. Let us see what you see in your memory. We want to see the sculpture, not just the block of marble. One of the reasons readers read and writers write is to find beauty. Beauty can be found in truth, in kindness, in the hard land that shaped your mother, a dirty word when one is needed, but above all in this body that is host to our humanity. Fat freckled ankles, sharp shoulder blades, calloused elbows, silent cervical dilations, white lace on black skin. Let us be enriched by seeing what you see. There are many reasons for writing memoir, but perhaps the primary one for many is to offer nourishment and possibility to those who come after. You offer what you have learned by means of your stories. Your anecdotes will be read and reread if the people in them are not disembodied. Give them bodies to let their spirits sing through the pages, the ages. It takes more time for you, the writer, to accumulate corporeal detail, but slow writing, like slow food, is more nourishing in the ways that matter.
Thank you, Diane. That's wonderful. We'll take a short break now.